Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab with Lisa Scythe, who is a professional private counselor with Integrity Psychological and Counseling Associates and an adjunct professor with the Social Work Department at USI. Radio Rehab is only a support to the real work of recovery and does not offer definitive answers or attempt to counsel anyone in their own personal behavior. Although the program does not endorse any program of recovery, it holds the belief that most recovery works are an effort of true conviction and concern of the benefit of the suffering and can be trusted to offer real hope and better choices. And now Radio Rehab with Lisa Scythe.
Has an incredible story of his journey to share with us. And believe me, he's been affected by the drink and the drug culture, and he'll share with you about that. Don't hesitate to call in 424-1400. If you have any questions for Kelly and I, nothing's below the belt. He has been clean and sober almost 3 years now, which is an incredible story in itself. But he is now the community grants manager for the city of Evansville with the mayor, and he loves making sure people get stuff they need that can help them get started and keep doing good things. He's an Evansville native. He's won the Sedell Berger Civil Rights Award for his tireless efforts in the civil rights and human rights movement of 2012. He's vice president of the Tri-State Alliance, and you know, all of those things tell us about his character, but he's here today to share from his heart who he is, what shaped him. And Kelly, thank you so much for coming. I could just go on and on the whole show and talk about how awesome
you
are.
Please do. Please do.
I know, but yeah, that humility is even more important. And really, with all the fun that you are, there's a humility and an authenticity about you that we're going to be glad to hear about today.
How funny that is. That's very sweet.
It's true. So, wow, tell us about you and what shaped you. And
well, you know, one of the things about that, the Sedell Berger Award, because Lisa and I, you and I both belong to Temple Edith Benet.
Right.
And I'm half Jewish. My natural father, who I really had no relationship with, his father was Jewish. And so, you know, I ran from Judaism for, you know, 40 years. I just didn't, you know.
So did Moses.
Yeah,
it took him that long to get out of the desert.
He stood at the promised land. He never did make it to, you know, he didn't make it. But, you know, I came to embrace that. I came to embrace that side of me because I realized that was the side of me that pushed me forward. It was that it was my grandfather's Jewishness. It's what pushed him out of Europe. You know, he escaped the Germans 7 years before Hitler invaded Greece, and was a single father and had his little boy, my dad, you know, who was kind of a putz. You know, I call him my mom's sperm donor.
Right.
But it was that pushed me forward, and I think that really helped shape me into who I am. But I started working with the Tri-State Alliance many, many years ago, trying to make life better for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people in Evansville and the Evansville community. And I think we've made great strides over the years in not only shifting our culture here. You know, we went, you know, when I was 18, 19 years old, gay and lesbian people were, you know, the old joke about Evansville was that the gay men were all married to women and had kids. And that was, you know, that was true for it really was. I mean, it's still, to a certain extent, that does happen. But the acceptance of gay people has been tremendous. You know, we started from a point of, you know, we were beaten up and murdered on the streets. Vilified and denied housing and denied, you know, and today, you know, we passed 8-0 last December, a civil rights ordinance with the city council with support of every city councilman, including the one Republican, Dan McGinn, on the council, who's a very good friend of mine. And we've shifted everything 180 degrees. You know, I go and I talk to a lot of student groups, U of E and USI, and these were people born in the 90s, you know, when I was, you know, in my 30s. But I always ask them this question before I start my lectures, you know, how many people, and you got a room of 200 kids, and I always ask them this question, how many in this room do not have one gay or lesbian friend? And, you know, very seldom does anybody raise their hand. Once in a while, one student will. And I always tell them now, in 1980, when I was 21, if I'd asked that same question, everybody would have raised their hands, even if they had a gay friend. And it's because of that stigma that somebody might think you were gay if you had a gay friend and admitted it.
So how did you grow up in that and be so okay with that? Did alcohol and drugs play a role in any of that? Or,
well, you know, when I was a teenager in the 70s, pot was the big deal. You know, pot was the thing. We'd get high at lunch and go back to school. And it, you know, in my personal life, drugs and alcohol were things that other people had problems with, you know, and with the problem, I think, in the 70s, you know, people I have always said, you know, well, why did AIDS hit gay people first? And one of the reasons AIDS hit gay people first was because, you know, it wasn't until the late 60s that all those anti-gay laws, you know, it was illegal to be gay in Indiana until 1975.
It was a psychiatric disorder, yeah.
But it was against the law. It was against the law. You couldn't be who you were. And in the late 60s, very early 70s, most states in the nation started to eliminate those laws. You know, when it was removed from the American Psychiatric Association's list of psychiatric disorders, that was removed from the list.
70s, yeah.
Right. And what happened in that culture, all of a sudden you had these bright, booming bars and dance clubs and things. You know, we had the swinging door here when I was younger. And these bright, booming places opened up, and what you had was a culture that was already involved in drinking and in getting high. And there were a lot of unprotected sex going on. And that's what happened. That was when the AIDS virus, you know, was already killing people in Africa. It was a botched polio vaccine experiment. And it was already killing people in Africa. And it moved through the West Indies. It moved up through Jamaica and Haiti. And it came into the United States through Florida, Miami, up to New York, to San Francisco. And this newly free gay culture that was exploding all around us, the unprotected sex that was going on, the drinking and the drugs that pervade, and it wasn't just gay people that were using drugs and drinking, but it was this culture that people were suddenly free and suddenly out there, and that's why it hit the gay community first, is because of that explosion in gay culture and gay freedom.
The unprotected sex.
Yeah, it was the unprotected
sex. That definitely
sex.
Goes
right.
with over-drinking
well, you
and
know,
drugging.
It was very sad. But the other piece of that was nothing was done for years. You know, it was the late 80s before major funding went into research.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it only hit those people. I still have articles. When we started the AIDS Resource Group mm-hmm. in 1988, I still have articles from the Courier which said, you know, well, the general population doesn't need to worry about AIDS, you know, and that it was a brand new name. I still have these articles that said, you know, you can't, you know, it's only in certain populations. And I saved those articles because I buried 35 friends.
Goodness.
I buried 35 friends. 35 friends.
Young people, 20s and 30s. And they called it AIDS then. Now it's HIV, right?
Well, it's HIV, acute immune deficiency disorder. But it was in those days, they called it GRID.
Well, Sam, when he got it, they called it ARC.
Yeah, AIDS-related complex. They had all these names for it when actually there was just the one HIV virus causes AIDS. And that's what it was a hybrid virus that came from chimpanzee kidneys that they were using in the polio research. And it was the simian immune deficiency virus that jumped to humans and it was in the Congo, and it moved through through America. But that drug and alcohol culture weakened people's immune systems, mm-hmm. and when that virus started its movement through the gay community, the gay culture, it started this epidemic. There's a wonderful documentary called Sex in an Epidemic, which shows you how this virus spread through the gay community. So, I'll have to let you borrow that sometime. It's a marvelous documentary.
So it wasn't a gay thing. It was
a blood-borne disorder that wasn't treated.
And people that were more promiscuous sexually were just higher risk. It had nothing to do with gay.
It didn't have much to do with that. It was just it would get into your system through unprotected sex. But one of the things, gay people had to save themselves. I talk about that in my gay history lecture that I do at the universities, is that, gay people had to organize. It was what brought gay men and lesbians together for the first time. Gay men and lesbians lived separate lives for most of American culture. But it brought us together because it was the women that saved the men. It really was. They were the ones that marched and put the quilt together and raised the money. It was the lesbians who stepped up and said, "We have to save these guys." And
so were you swept away in all? I mean, did you 35 friends, Kelly? Did you have a sense of survivor's guilt, or did you just know?
Oh, it was terrible. It was a terrible sense of survivor's guilt, and that's. But I tried to turn that into doing good things. I was on the board of directors of the AIDS Resource Group for many years, and tried my best to raise awareness and raise money. And we do the AIDS Holiday Project with TSA every year at holiday time. We try to feed these families, give them grocery store gift cards, and we have angel trees all over town. But who would have thought? And I always go back and from being the vantage point of my age now, I can look back and think, wow, we had our TSA candidates night. For political candidates this week, and we had candidates for the judgeships and candidates for county office, and last year we had the both mayoral candidates. My boss Lloyd Winicky has stood up and said that he supports gay rights.
Right.
But who would have thought of that?
Yeah.
When in 1980.
No, or 90,
it would have been so foreign to people.
Right.
That's how far, the other thing I always use as an example, there was a movie that came out in 1982 called Making Love with Michael Ontkean and Harry Hamlin. It was about a married doctor who begins a gay affair with Harry Hamlin, who's a writer. And this movie came out in 1982, and a bunch of us went to see it. Rick Diekman, our old friend, we all went to see this movie because it was we all knew what it was about. And there's this about 20 minutes into the film, there's a scene where Michael Ontkean and Harry Hamlin kiss for the first time. And I'll never forget the night we went to see. We were all in the back row, all of us little gay kids. We were all in the back row. And at that moment, you'd have thought someone yelled fire because everybody stood up and ran out. People were yelling. It was pandemonium. Guys were pulling their girlfriends out of their seats and yelling and leaving the theater. And, we were just kind of laughing about it. But then, 2005, when Brokeback Mountain came out, My partner, we've been together 18 years in March, which is remarkable.
Yes.
But he and I a bunch of us went to see Brokeback Mountain when it premiered. And in that first scene where Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, have sex for the first time, nothing happened.
Nobody walked out of
nobody
the theater.
Nobody yelled. There was no screaming.
Right.
Nobody left the theater. And I thought, that is progress. That is so much progress.
That's,
when I was 18, the
that's
only two,
20 years later.
Yeah, the only two advantages you had to being gay when I was 18 was nobody thought you'd get married and you didn't have to go to the Army. So I've had to shift 360 degrees. But I was the luckiest kid in America.
Why?
I was born in 59. And my mother was a single mom. She'd left my father, who was kind of a yutz. And had come back
in 1959 to be a single mom.
Yeah, it was dicey. But she had great parents. Her parents were very supportive. But she was an Irish Catholic, and she had married a Jewish man, and so she was already in trouble. So she came back to Evansville. They were Assumption Catholics. They, the cathedral that was torn down. So they came. She came back to him. But I, when I was very little. I just showed you that picture today, my favorite picture, because you look at old family pictures and all of a sudden you see, oh my God, when I was very little, I liked playing with girls' toys. I loved my mother's purses. And my mother would always give me one of her old purses. And I carried that around. She told me when I was little, I carried this purse around with me all the time. And I would keep all my secret stuff in it. And I would dress up my stuffed animals. And I'd put a hat on. And I'd say, oh, I'm going downtown. And you know, she realized, you know, she told me later when I was a teenager, when we started talking about these things, that you know, she knew there was something different. You know, in 1961
or
62,
there was something different because of your attraction.
I knew there was something. But you don't have a word for it.
Was that your femininity?
I don't know if it was femininity. It's just, you know, something's different. You know, something is, and what I feel sorry for, and we work with a lot of, at TSA, we work with a lot of young people who have varying degrees of horrific stories about coming out to their families.
Oh, it's such drinking and drugs.
Yes,
I see them in my private practice.
You know, it leads to, when you're depressed, when you're forced.
Well, when your sexuality has to be quenched like that.
Exactly. And then, you know, I was so nurtured for my whole life. You know,
by everybody,
yes,
in your inner circle?
By everybody in my inner circle. There was nobody. My mother married a man later whose first wife had passed away. And he was a politician. He owned a large business. I mean, he put me through school. How many stepfathers pay for your college? I don't know many. But he had a sister who was a lesbian. And she and her partner were central to the family unit. Mm. I mean, everybody liked them. Everybody loved them. And these two women traveled the world together. They were librarians. They worked for the library system. Hmm. And she was, Aunt Elsa was just a, she was just a remarkable person. And she was smart. And these two women, when I was 15, 16 years old, I'd sit on their patio with them and laugh for hours. They would tell me all kinds of funny stories about people that they knew when they were in the war. You know, they met in England during World War II. They both worked for the women. My aunt was with the Women's Army Corps. She was an army nurse, and she met this other lady who was British. She was with the British Corps, and they came back to America where they settled down. And they were just wonderful women. And I knew then, okay, these two women have this wonderful life. I can have this wonderful life. I can have what they have.
So as a teenager, you were surrounded. You are the luckiest kid in the world.
I was the luckiest kid.
You had adults around you that embraced you, embraced each other. They were okay with that kind of expression of your sexuality.
I never had that pressure to be something I couldn't be. I never had that.
What a gift, Kelly.
In my house, you know, in the 70s, and when I was in high school, Harrison, there were a number of us who were out to each other.
But in
high school, there were four or five of us. When my friend John died, you know, he was in Texas, and he called me 2 weeks before he died. And the day he died, I cried all day. I couldn't leave my house. I had to call in sick. Yeah. I called and said I couldn't leave my house. But my house was the house that they could come to, and we could listen to Cher records and talk about boys and have just a wonderful time. My mother would make, you know, my mother didn't throw Bible verses at us. She made pizza rolls.
All right. Don't go away. Radio Rehab, we will be right back. We're talking to Kelly Curris just about his life, his contributions and his observations what a great journey to share with him today. So come back, call if you want to, 424-1400. Nothing's below the belt. We will be right back.
Did you know drug and or alcohol problems are one of the major reasons why people lose their jobs, their health, and even their families? Don't let this happen to you. There is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. At Brentwood Meadows, we provide compassionate, professional, effective treatment. Our goal is to help get you back feeling healthy and happy once again. Call us today at 812-858-7200 for a free evaluation. This may be one of the most important calls you'll ever make.
If you are suffering from depression or anxiety, please listen to this important message. You are not alone, and there is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. Brentwood Meadows is a new state-of-the-art facility located in a private setting in Newburgh, Indiana. At Brentwood Meadows, we understand that feelings of anxiety, loss of control, loneliness, fear, and confusion affect your life and the lives of those around you. Take control. Call Brentwood Meadows for a free, no-obligation evaluation. Call 812-858-7200.
More people choose Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville during the Incredible Room Packages event. Right now, buy a sofa for only $378 or buy the stylish living room for only $998. Get a queen bed for only $378 or get your dream bedroom for one low price, only $998. Plus, enjoy no interest financing for 12 months. Great style doesn't have to be expensive, so what are you waiting for? Hurry in for great low prices during the Incredible Room Packages event at your Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville. Some exclusions apply. See store for full details.
I am Alan Liebenguth, candidate for Indiana State Representative, District 77. These are demanding times. As a Top Gun pilot, I experienced demanding situations where strategic decision-making was critical, and I am uniquely qualified in the workforce to represent the people. Evansville, Indiana is at the crossroads where job growth is essential to competing in the Midwest. Vote for Alan Liebenguth. Let me represent you in Indianapolis.
Paid for by community like Liebenguth, Bart Matthews, Treasurer.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, a dynamic program for those who have been touched by alcohol and or substance abuse. Our lines are always open, so pick up the phone right now and call into the program at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab is brought to you by Brentwood Meadows. Brentwood Meadows, there's hope, there's help. And now, here's Lisa.
Welcome back. We're talking to Kelly Curris about his life and the things that shaped him. And we were just talking at break, and I think it's interesting. He didn't suffer from self-esteem issues or feeling lost in a crowd. He was smoking marijuana on a regular basis, he said, because it was available and it was just part of his group. And I think it's important we understand that not every kid or adult that goes off into the world of substance abuse starts out wanting to escape anything. Kelly,
it just feels good.
Were there. It enhanced everything that was already good for you, and it was just available.
If you went to a party, the gay parties were the best parties to go to in the 80s, girl.
And the
everybody,
music,
everybody,
the,
you know, in the 80s, and it's hard to imagine that culture, because gay culture is. You know, the more mainstream gay people become, you know, my partner and I live out in the suburbs. We have a one-story house with a front lawn, and we raise two kids there.
And, just a normal home.
Yeah, we mow
family.
The lawn, and you know, our gay agenda is to pay the mortgage. And you know, someone said, "Oh, gay relationships are just all about sex." And I said, "Well, no, ask my husband, because he wishes it was. It's about mortgage payments." But the more mainstream gay culture becomes, the farther away
somebody wants to call and ask you something. Don't go away. I want to get back to that mainstream stuff. Hi, welcome to Radio Rehab.
How you doing? Yeah, I don't have a problem with...
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you speak up a little bit?
I don't have a problem with that. Only thing what he's talking about. Only thing that bothers me, he's trying to equate this gay rights and all this stuff, equal rights for blacks. You know, as you can tell, I'm a black man. And, you know, I can't see how he can equate this, because we didn't choose to be black, but he chose to be the way he is, which is fine with me. I don't have a problem with it. But that's, I don't understand how they can always equate this with equal rights and all that when he's a black. You know, like, we fought for years. You know, we didn't choose to be black. We had to fight. We marched. We done everything we wanted to do. And he's trying to equate all that with that. And I just can't understand how he can do that. That's my question to him. Thank you.
Oh, that's very interesting. Thank you very much. I think, I don't think he's equating it to race at all, how rights issue.
My first lover was black. My first relationship was with a black man.
What he's saying, though, is that he couldn't choose to be black. He had to fight.
I didn't choose to be gay.
Hmm.
What I chose to do, and what gay people have chosen to do, is to fight for our rights, as our civil rights as American citizens. And what I think he doesn't understand, and this, you know, maybe he should see my history lecture, because gay people in ancient times were burned at the stake. You know, in the Middle Ages, we were burned at the stake. We were slaughtered.
Right. Kel, do you see it as the same kind of civil rights issue?
Oh, absolutely.
You do?
Absolutely.
So
if I'd lived 40 years earlier in the century, I would have been on those buses. I would have been on those buses going through the South fighting for civil rights for people. I would have been fighting on those buses. I would have been riding the buses.
You're one of those that also does not believe that homosexuality is a choice.
Oh, it's not. Well, it's you know who you are. It's part of your. Well, our brains work differently than heterosexual brains work. The brain pans are different. The brain scans are different. No one
yes.
chooses to be. What you choose is how you live your life.
Oh, I bet. Ooh, this opened up a hot potato. Hold on, we got another caller. Hi, welcome to Radio Rehab.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning.
Good morning.
Associated with what the other gentleman caller stated about the gay rights and being African American, and perhaps he did not choose to be gay, and of course we did not choose to be the color that we are. However, if we're being persecuted as an African American and we move to, let's say, another state or another side of town, people would still know that we were African American. However, if he did not want to be persecuted because he was gay, he could move to way over on the other side of the state or other side of the town, and he could choose to stay in the closet, and no one would ever think that he was gay and would not choose to persecute him or treat him badly or what have you. But as an African American, we can't shove off our color. We can't go and hide our color. If you understand what I'm saying.
Sure, sure. You should never hide who. You should never even want to hide who you are. You should never want to hide. You should always be just who you are. I wouldn't want to hide. I mean, I would never want to hide the fact that I'm gay. I want to be out there fighting for people's rights.
Yeah.
I don't want to hide who I am. And black, you know, African Americans in the United States, I would have been on the buses had I lived 40 years earlier.
Sure.
Everyone who lives in America should have the same rights. The same rights
right.
to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I think what the callers are saying is that in the black community, in the black world, in the black history, they have never had the luxury of hiding. That they're different than the mainstream white world, where gays, at least white gays especially, can at least hide it if they choose to. I think that's more what they're saying than that there's, you know, a big
well,
difference.
And I want to be able to understand that, but what the callers have to understand is that gay people were persecuted for something they can't do anything about.
As well as
African American people were persecuted for something they couldn't do anything about. But you should start from the viewpoint of, should you want to do something about it? You shouldn't want to do something about it. You should be able to live your life
mm-hmm.
and enjoy your relationships, mm-hmm. enjoy your life without having to hide something.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where that pressure to drink and to bury that self-esteem, that you're different. That's where a lot of that drug abuse comes
yeah,
from.
Yeah.
And you know, I've studied a lot of black history. I wrote a play. I try to raise money for the African American Museum. I wrote a play for the museum last year. And we produced that play at U of E. Black history is very important to me.
Yes.
Just as much as GLBT history. I was a history major in school. And, you know, black history, you have to go find black history in Evansville. It's, you know, it's not taught in school the way mainstream history is. And the black leaders of the United States, whether it's Paul Robeson, who was vilified, I was so fortunate. I'm on the board of directors of the Diversity Lecture Series, and I got to meet Harry Belafonte this week, which is like one of the highlights of my life.
He
was so nice to me, he and I talked a little bit about GLBT civil rights, and he said, you got to keep working.
The gay lesbian.
Yes.
Explain what GLBT stands for.
A gay lesbian, bisexual, and transgender.
It sounds like bacon, lettuce, tomato.
I know,
sandwich.
Doesn't it? Well, we're going to add LGBT. J, you know, get the gay juice in there. Yeah. Everyone.
What's it stand for? G.
Gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and the hot button topic, I guess, is gay marriage, and people have this argument going on about gay relationships. But I never dreamed 30 years ago. I never dreamed that anybody would even be talking about that.
Yeah.
You know, we were still trying to survive. you know, gay people were beaten on the streets, and you know, our brains bashed in cities and towns.
Did you experience that?
No, but I knew people who did. I knew people who were beaten, mm-hmm. who were attacked, and we started the youth group to have a safe place for young gay people to go, where they could, you know, be with each other, interact with each other, and learn, you know, learn self-esteem, learn these things.
God, Kel, I sponsored Dr. Steve, who's passed away now, but mm-hmm. yeah, he used to tell me in college how he was beat up and robbed and. Such hatred. And I think what the callers are probably responding more to is it's hatred, but it's for your sexuality, not the color of your skin.
Right. But
which hatred's hatred.
Hatred is hatred.
But I think the callers probably were just trying to say, hey, we know your hatred.
There was a German professor, Magnus Hirschfeld, who in the 1920s, you know, the only other time in world history that there was a gay culture that was free to exist was in Germany between World War I and World War II in the 20s. If you ever saw the movie Cabaret,
sure.
It kind of deals with Christopher Isherwood short stories that became Cabaret, kind of detailed that. There was a Magnus Hirschfeld was a professor of psychology at the University of Berlin, and there was a scandal that happened in Germany just before World War I, that was, you know, homosexual, the word homosexual was a German invention. That word was invented in the 19th century. It's a very recent word. But there was this Magnus Hirschfeld decided he wanted to study this phenomena that people were talking about. You know, it was one of the first times that it was in general discussion. And he traveled the world. He went to all the, you know, in those days, European countries had colonized much of the third world, you know, stealing their resources. And he traveled to various parts of the world which were not civilized, which were not industrialized. And what he found that, you know, there was this phenomena that had this same sex attraction in every culture. You know, and it was because of his research.
No respecter of cultures.
Yeah, there were gay people in Pago. There were gay people in Africa. There were gay people everywhere.
Sure.
And he found this phenomenon. He wrote this paper when he got back to Germany in Berlin in 1919. He said, you know, this is not because, you know, the laws in Germany were terrible. You know, you'd go to prison at hard labor if you were found to be, you know, homosexual, and. People were killed. It was the law. And what the German government did is that in Berlin, they relaxed their enforcement of those laws, because he said, you know, this is something that obviously occurs naturally, and it's not something that should be punished. It's something that we should study and learn more about.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this 10-year period when there was this, but what happened was, you know, writers and musicians and artists, you know, Berlin was the place to go. They, you know, come to Berlin, all these gay people moved there, these gay men and lesbians.
That was the San Francisco.
It was the center of learning and culture. And then the Nazis came in, mm-hmm. and, you know, some of the first people to be rounded up and sent to concentration camps were homosexual men. A few lesbians, but over a 10-year period, the Germans murdered probably 200,000. So they wanted to wipe that out. They wanted to eliminate it from their culture because they saw it as a danger to the German master race. They saw it as something terrible. So the only other time before the American culture that sprang up after Stonewall in 1969 was in that little German period there. But Hirschfeld, his research showed, and later Kinsey showed, when Alfred Kinsey was working, that, you know, the same-sex attraction occurs in a percentage of the population, no matter what population it is. It's, you know, Hindu, Chinese, Japanese. There are gay Eskimos. They're everywhere. But so these people, these homosexual men and women, for many years existed without any protection. So when it became, when American Psychiatric Association took it off the list of psychiatric disorders, gay people started fighting for their rights to just exist, to just live, to not be fired from a job, to not be denied an apartment or housing. And so you have to remember the civil right is different from some religious right or some religious freedom, some religious thing. Your civil right is that social contract between you and your government, between you and your civil authority. And so that's what the civil right is about.
Interesting.
That civil right, this, the right to exist, the right to... You know, my partner and I have been together for 18 years. I have friends. There's a couple here in town that have been together for 35 years. But they're, you know, they don't have those protections that a married couple does. You know, the social, you know, to inherit Social Security, the right to inherit property that you've lived in together all these years. There are all these things that impact gay couples that other couples don't have. And, you know, what I don't think many Americans are aware that almost every democracy in the world has gay, legalized gay civil unions. Almost all of Western Europe, I think with the exception of Italy, but Ireland, England, France, Spain, Portugal, Germany, where we were put in concentration camps and murdered, Denmark, almost every Western civilized country, Brazil, Argentina, Israel will recognize a gay marriage that comes from some other country. I mean, you almost have to both be Jewish to be married in Israel anyway. But Mexico will recognize a marriage. So, you know, I always do this map when I do this lecture. You know, if you start in Canada, you're married. And if you travel through the United States, well, you're just friends. Then you get to Illinois, and you're married. And then you travel through Kentucky, and you're just friends. And then you get to Mexico, and you're married again. And then you can be married all the way down to Antarctica. So it's just kind of funny.
It's just fascinating, the history, though.
Yeah. But you know, your program really is about substance abuse issues, and we have a lot of young people that come to us, and they're in various stages of coming out, and that pressure that they feel from their families. You know, I mentioned that my first relationship was with an African American guy, and he was a wonderful person. And I haven't seen him in many, 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 many years. And he was a great guy. But he was so terrified of his family. You know, he was a basketball player. And he was an athlete. And his family, he was so terrified.
Family, schools.
That his family
would
let
the gay kids to the proms with their partners.
Well, you know, that's changing.
It's changing in most EVSC schools.
Our prom that we had, that we sponsor, we had 600 at our prom this year.
600
without an alcohol incident, without a substance abuse incident, without any conflict. 600 came
kids
to our prom this year. It's getting big. We're going to have to move it from the hotel. We have it at the Holiday Inn on Highway 41. We're going to have to move it.
There were 600.
There were 600
young people.
We gave them little red ribbons to try to keep count.
Yeah.
And we bought 500 of the red ribbons, and we ran out about 8 o'clock. And there were another 100 kids that came in after that.
Kel, that is
it's
great.
It's phenomenal.
Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We have to let our sponsors in. We're talking to Kelly Curris, who is an encyclopedia of knowledge about history and policies. We'll be right back.
Did you know drug and or alcohol problems are one of the major reasons why people lose their jobs, their health, and even their families? Don't let this happen to you. There is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. At Brentwood Meadows, we provide compassionate, professional, effective treatment. Our goal is to help get you back feeling healthy and happy once again. Call us today at 812-858-7200 for a free evaluation. This may be one of the most important calls you'll ever make.
If you are suffering from depression or anxiety, please listen to this important message. You are not alone, and there is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. Brentwood Meadows is a new state-of-the-art facility located in a private setting in Newburgh, Indiana. At Brentwood Meadows, we understand that feelings of anxiety, loss of control, loneliness, fear, and confusion affect your life and the lives of those around you. Take control. Call Brentwood Meadows for a free, no-obligation evaluation. Call 812-858-7200.
More people choose Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville during the Incredible Room Packages event. Right now, buy a sofa for only $378 or buy the stylish living room for only $998. Get a queen bed for only $378 or get your dream bedroom for one low price, only $998. Plus, enjoy no interest financing for 12 months. Great style doesn't have to be expensive, so what are you waiting for? Hurry in for great low prices during the Incredible Room Packages event at your Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville. Some exclusions apply. See store for full details.
I am Alan Liebenguth, candidate for Indiana State Representative, District 77. These are demanding times. As a Top Gun pilot, I experienced demanding situations where strategic decision-making was critical, and I am uniquely qualified in the workforce to represent the people. Evansville, Indiana is at the crossroads where job growth is essential to competing in the Midwest. Vote for Alan Liebenguth. Let me represent you in Indianapolis.
Paid for by Community Select Liebenguth, Barb Matthews Treasurer.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, a dynamic program for those who have been touched by alcohol and or substance abuse. Our lines are always open, so pick up the phone right now and call into the program at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab is brought to you by Brentwood Meadows. Brentwood Meadows, there's hope, there's help. And now, here's Lisa.
Remember?
Get in your face.
We're back talking to Kelly Couris, and Mr. Lander stopped in for a minute. This has just been a very interesting time to hear about Kelly's passions and beliefs, and thank you, callers, for calling in. We welcome being stretched.
Oh, absolutely.
Being stretched to think and to experience different people's realities. So, Kelly, you were talking about young people and your prom and substance abuse amongst the
gang. Yeah, and you know, that pressure to be something that you can't be is very difficult. I had a young fella, he was 16, 17, and he told me that, you know, where he went to church, that these people were so mean to him, that the other kids teased him and taunted him and tormented him. And I said, I go to the church youth group, and they're so mean to me, and they say mean things. He said, "What do you think I should do?" Mm. And I looked at him, and I said, "Don't go.
Don't go, right?
Don't go.
Don't put yourself there."
We had a.
See, Kel, I think that's what our callers were talking about. At least when you're white and gay, you can hide that. You cannot go. When you're black, you have to go.
Well, I'm not saying hide who you are. I'm saying don't go where people are mean to you. Go where people want you.
Well,
there are churches. Yeah. There are churches in town where gay people are welcome.
Yes.
The First Presbyterian, Kevin Fleming, is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, you know, St. Mary's downtown, Steve Linsenick, Father Steve,
Sister
is just
Darlene,
he's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, they have St. Mary's has a gay Catholics group.
Right.
I've done programs for them several times.
Yeah.
But the idea that you should hide who you are.
Did you ever feel like you had to?
Oh, hell no.
You never did?
Oh, no, never.
Do you think that's because your parents embraced it?
Absolutely.
So that's where it starts.
Absolutely. If your parents accept who you are and treat you with respect and treat you kindly and love you, then you can do wonderful things. If your parents treat you like a criminal because of something that you can't do anything about,
or they're embarrassed about it.
And you know, the other issue, have you ever seen that? There was a, you know, in the 30s and 40s, the big scandal was who was passing as white.
Who was what?
Passing as white. There was a movie called An Imitation of Life. Freddie Washington, who was very light, she was very light. She, on film, she almost looked white. The film was about the daughter of a black woman who obviously was mixed race, and her goal was to pass. She wanted to pass as white so that she could make it in white culture. And this, you know, the sad thing is that the same movie could be made 25 years later with Lana Turner, essentially the same film. Mm-hmm. But there was this, the scandal was, you know, there was an actress, I think, maybe Mercedes McCambridge, that was the big scandal, was, you know, passing. You know, if you were very light, you could leave the South and move to the North and make it in white culture. And how, you know, how sad that is that anybody have to do that.
Yeah.
And to be something that you're not in order to make it. You know, civil rights are for everybody.
Right.
Civil rights are for everyone. And the contract between citizen and government should be the same for all citizens. You should never try and hide who you are. What I told that young man that not to go to that youth group, go someplace where you're welcome. Go someplace where you're welcome as a gay teenager. Go someplace where they'll be kind to you and nurture you and encourage you. Don't go where people are going to be mean to you. David Goldhagen, my favorite Jewish author, David Goldhagen, he wrote Hitler's Willing Executioners. In this book, he said, and it's so brilliant, that with or without religion, good people will do good things and bad people will do bad things. It's religion that makes good people do bad things. And that is so true. That is so true. We had there was the chaplain at U of E, Brian Erickson, who was just incredibly bright and incredibly inclusive. He called us one day and said that this young man had come to him, and he was a student there, and his parents were paying for his education. And he said, you know, he was in tears because he said, I really want to come out to my parents that I'm gay, but he said, I know they're going to react badly, and they'll probably cut me off. And he said, I don't know what to do. And Brian said, I don't know how to advise him. I said, tell him not to tell him till he graduates. Get your diploma, and then bring your boyfriend home. Get your diploma. Finish your education.
Take care of your little sensitive self.
And Brian Erickson, he just kind of went, oh, I didn't think of that. So it's so obvious.
You got to be gay to think about that.
Thank you. I'm sorry. But that's, you should never have to hide who you are.
Yeah.
And we were talking about mainstreaming.
And substance abuse, same thing. They're afraid to come out and tell anybody. They could get fired. It could hurt their credibility if somebody knows they're an addict.
Right. We were talking about mainstreaming, and there's a wonderful book out now called The Death of Gay Culture. And in the 80s, the smart crowd would go to Funkies and dance and party and drink, and then they would go to...
Or Good Time Bobbies.
Good Time Bobbies and drink. And then the real sophisticated straight people would all come to the Swinging Door after midnight, the gay bar, because that's where the good music was. That's where the hot culture
was. That's where it was happening.
That's where it was happening for that late night crowd.
That's where AIDS was all over the place.
Yeah, it was in the 80s, but that gay culture, that separate thing that gay people had, gay people generally lived in the urban core, around the major cities in older homes, and where they, created apartments, and that was where the gay ghetto was, they called at the gay, mm-hmm. Downtown, you had First Street, Second Street, where a lot of gay, I lived there.
Do you remember when Laura Lubenhausen was murdered?
I do, 1981. I do.
And, I loved Stan. Nobody ever brought up that she was a lesbian woman with Shiro.
In 1981, you couldn't say that.
I mean, they could have made that an issue. I was glad no one did. They let her, they left that alone in the case.
Well, because it would have been the central focus of the story instead of the fact that she was brutally murdered.
Oh, my God.
That would have been
the
focus in 1981.
And Lefko kept convicting him and even reconvicted him again. He was ready to get out.
I love Stan Lefko.
Yes.
He is so awesome.
He was not going to let that guy out.
No, absolutely. And, the sad thing is that in those days, Harvey Milk said the way to combat homophobia is for just gay people to come out. Just come out. Like Anderson Cooper. If we'd had an Anderson Cooper 30 years ago, culture could have been a lot different. We could have moved faster.
And a Kelly Curris in Evansville, Indiana.
Well, I was here, and I was doing what I could, but,
And you have, and you still do.
I went to, I remember there was a series of beatings. There used to be a little, behind the old post office, there was a section of First Street that was kind of abandoned. And on Saturday nights, before the bars, after the bars would close, gay people would come and mingle and park their cars there and wander around. And there was a series of attacks that happened on people back there, guys in pickup trucks with baseball bats. And I remember there was a little committee of us that went to the chief of police at the time it was 1981, 1982. Please come, please help. Patrol, help us, help us stop this. And so there were some of us that were out there that were trying our best to get things done. And it just takes, culture takes a long time to evolve. And,
There is a gay AA meeting now.
I know, and I think that's wonderful.
Just started again.
There needs to be.
Used to be back in the day.
Yeah, back in the I remember that in the 80s.
There was a strong gay AA community here, Jim B. And
I remember.
But it folded.
Yeah.
Now they've revitalized it again.
I think the issues of substance abuse in gay people.
Which do they want to deal with first, right?
The straight America, for many years, when they would go to the movies, the only time they would see a gay character in the movies was as somebody who was depressed, sad, suicidal, was
drunk.
The Children's Hour.
Yeah.
And those movies that, you know, the gay character would always hang themselves at the end because they'd be so depressed. And when you grow up, when you watch those kind of movies, and that's the only gay person you see, well, of course you're going to grow up
scared,
thinking, you know, this is a terrible thing for me. But, you know, now, my gosh, I'm so jealous of young people. You know, I'm not going to live long enough to see gay people as completely equal citizens. I don't think I'll live long enough to see that. Because I'm in my 50s now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know what time it is. But these young people that have Glee, and they have, what's the new show, The New Normal, and they have all of these straight allies out there that are on our side.
That's on our side.
You have politicians, you know, you have a mayor like Lloyd Winicky, who's so inclusive, and who would have thought that 30 years ago?
Right.
So the kids that are 20, 18, 19, 20 now that I go and talk to at, you know, the universities, they're going to have this long life.
It's a new world for them.
Where things are going to be so different. I'm so jealous of that, you know? I'd like to go back
and
start over.
You helped make that happen.
Well,
here in town.
Well, yeah, there were other, you know, Wally Painter. No one works harder than Wally.
Oh, my God.
Wally schleps around with those newsletters, and oh, my God.
Oh, my God, for years tirelessly.
I know.
And you're bored.
We have a great board. We have a great group of passionate people, some straight, some gay.
Right.
Some black, some white. You know, we have allies out there that are, you know, Sabrina Thomas. So she was the diversity MBE coordinator for the diversity construction community for so long. I mean, we have all these wonderful people who understand. They get it. They get it.
But it's taken a lot.
But you know, that substance abuse is so endemic.
Yeah.
And not just gay culture, but our American culture.
Yeah.
You know, everything that happens to the regular culture. You know, it's not gay men whose cars with their In God We Trust license plates are parked in front of the strip clubs in this town every weekend. Those are married heterosexual men who are going to watch those women take their clothes off and drink and carry on. That's not gay people that are doing that. That's straight people, okay?
Yeah.
But everything that happens in regular culture also happens in gay culture. You know, the drug use, alcoholism, drinking. You know, I quit drinking 34 months, November 1.
Yeah, that's great.
Because, you know, I write that newspaper column every week, and I found myself going to parties and going to events and having two or three drinks at one and then another drink at another. And you get to the point where it's like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. I can't keep this up. I can't do this because you're numb. You know, I'd have five or six cocktails, and I'd be able to get up the next morning at 7 o'clock and vacuum the carpet and leave the house and go to work. And it's just,
start all over.
Well, yeah, I got this. You build up this tolerance to it,
right.
And I realized that wasn't a good thing.
Right.
I realized, you know, I stopped smoking pot a long time ago, And
Do you think you grew out of it? Or
I don't know if I grew out of it. I just knew it wasn't doing anything constructive for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't doing anything constructive.
I think that's when most people have to stop, when they realize this is not doing anything for me. It's against me.
It's against you. It's against you. And for young people who fall into that, and whether you're gay or straight,
yeah,
whether you're black or white, you know, don't. If you have to bury your pain in something, turn your pain into something positive.
Mm,
turn your pain into something that's useful mm-hmm. for yourself. Don't do something that's going to hold you back. That's it. You know,
I think that's what AA does for us. I have always said it's the biggest lost and found organization in the world.
I think you're probably right.
Turning the pain into something positive and helping others, taking your pain and reaching out so others maybe don't have to feel it.
But just remember, and what I want your listeners to remember, is that what happens to straight people happens to gay people.
Absolutely.
You know, the AIDS epidemic, nobody did anything about it until they realized that this was a virus.
Well, and the heterosexuals were the ones that had to come. Elizabeth Taylor, and you had to have the heterosexuals come out and fight for
well,
it.
Well, you know, I can remember Jesse Helms, when he was a senator, wouldn't let Ryan White's mother in his office. She wanted to petition him for money to research mm-hmm. AIDS. You know, they burned his house down. This little boy, they
yeah.
burned his house down. But it was, you know, it was a blood-borne illness that should, you know, if they'd been fighting it early on, you know, maybe something, you know, things could have been different.
Where are we at now? I don't mean to sidetrack us
I know
here,
that,
but talk about you, but where are we at in a community? community with AIDS.
I'm so lucky. I get to meet with Brian Reveille every now and then at the AIDS Resource Group. And, you know, part of my job is to administer grants for homelessness in Evansville. You know, homelessness is invisible, really, in places like Evansville. You know, you don't step over the homeless at Garvin Park like you do in
the city. They're not on
the
walkway, yeah.
And that, to me, the homelessness and substance abuse go hand in hand.
Definitely.
Because they're both invisible things.
Yeah.
They're invisible to, you know.
And they are tied together.
They are absolutely tied together. But I get to visit with Brian, and, you know, I was on that board for 10 years, and it went from being, you know, hairdressers and interior designers to being husbands and wives and grandparents.
Bankers.
That were
politics.
That
yes.
were coming, you know, were infected. And I think that what will happen eventually is, if they don't come up with a vaccine to prevent it, what will happen is it'll be sort of like diabetes. It'll be sort of a chronic illness that you can treat with medicine. You know, I have a very good friend who's been infected for 25 years. He's lived with it for 25 years, and he's as healthy as a horse. He looks marvelous. He looks wonderful.
Was
he's
that
very
because
healthy.
Of early intervention?
Yes, early intervention.
And cancer, anything,
yes,
diabetes,
absolutely.
Heart disease.
Absolutely. He's doing wonderfully. But, you know, people like me who grew up, you know, there was a whole generation of gay men that died.
Yeah.
And there's not that many gay men my age.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a dodo bird, you know, a relic of another age. But it missed me. It missed me. And so I feel like I have to do everything I can to make life better for the people who are left behind.
Kelly, you're amazing. And you have. And
I love you.
It's
so much.
Passion. I mean, this isn't just something you do because you feel it's a work-related issue. You do it because you love it and want to make the world a better place.
We're going to keep sending you young people that we find that have substance abuse problems.
I would open my arms.
We're going to keep sending them to Lisa Seif.
All right.
Lisa Seif cares.
I'm going to send them back to Kelly.
Send them back home so we can get them jobs and
well,
keep them in school.
Well, it takes the village. It takes everybody.
It does. But, I always tell, whenever I finish those lectures, I always tell people that education is the equalizer.
But you're willing to knock on those doors that
I get up
don't
in your
want
face.
To open. I wish I had your courage. I don't have that courage. I admire your passion because you're willing to knock on those doors that don't want to open.
I am. I get up in their face.
I mean, even today, you don't back down.
I would have. It was really the rabbis were some of the first white people to go down south and ride those freedom rides. It was the rabbis, and then it was
sure.
the Catholic priests, and it was the, you know, I wish I'd been there.
You were.
Riding those buses.
You were, baby. You were.
I wish I'd been there.
But you were at Harrison High School or before.
A lot of racial tension at Harrison during my early part of high school. And my friend Estella Moss, her daughter and I, and several of us, we started this group called COPE to try and ease those racial problems. And so people could see that, you know, just because you were black or white, you know, your conflicts are the things that need to be resolved, and they don't have anything to do with race. And, you know, I love my black brothers and sisters.
Yes.
I do.
And I bet. It's a mutual love.
Well, you know, I always feel welcome. I always feel welcome.
Will you come back and share more and more and more of
anytime.
Your experience?
Anytime.
We need to hear you on Radio Rehab. We need to ruffle
feathers.
I've got
feathers. A face made for radio.
Yes, you do have a face made for radio. Much, much love. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, dear.
Radio Rehab, thank you for tuning in to this journey for another great hour of learning and sharing. We will be back next week, so don't forget between now and then to do the next right thing.
Right. Did you know drug and or alcohol problems are one of the major reasons why people lose their jobs, their health, and even their families? Don't let this happen to you. There is help. Real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. At Brentwood Meadows, we provide compassionate, professional, effective treatment. Our goal is to help get you back feeling healthy and happy once again. Call us today at 812-858-7200 for a free evaluation. This may be one of the most important calls you'll ever make.
If you are suffering from depression or anxiety, please listen to this important message. You are not alone, and there is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. Brentwood Meadows is a new state-of-the-art facility located in a private setting in Newburg, Indiana. At Brentwood Meadows, we understand that feelings of anxiety, loss of control, loneliness, fear, and confusion affect your life and the lives of those around you. Take control. Call Brentwood Meadows for a free, no-obligation evaluation. Call 812-858-7200.
More people choose Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville during the Incredible Room Packages event. Right now, buy a sofa for only $378 or buy the stylish living room for only $998. Get a queen bed for only $378 or get your dream bedroom for one low price, only $998. Plus, enjoy no interest financing for 12 months. Great style doesn't have to be expensive, so what are you waiting for? Hurry in for great low prices during the Incredible Room Packages event at your Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville. Some exclusions apply. See store for full details.
And now Geico presents 30 Seconds with Maxwell the Pig.
Hey, everyone. I'm Maxwell, and my life is kind of awesome because whenever Geico wants to talk about their new mobile app, they're like, hey, Maxwell, you feel like coming to the studio and talking about how the app lets you manage your policy, you know, and get roadside help and even customize it with your favorite Geico character? And I'm like, maybe. Are there going to be snacks?
Everything you love about Geico, now mobile. Download the new Geico app today.
Enjoy your pleas and wings, guys.
Thanks. Oh, we didn't always watch football here at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Ready for the big game?
We can't wait.
Hey, have you guys ever watched football on a vintage TV?
Huh?
19 inches, black and white. You can feel the raw emotion. Textbook German Express.